Good evening, everyone. It's nice to see your radiant faces in the Zoom squares. Wow, what a day it's been. What a, just, you know, really breathtaking, sad, stunning day. You know, I'm feeling myself, you know, quite just full and a little overwhelmed by the events of the day. You know, as you know, that we had planned for tonight to be the first in a series of talks and gatherings on the subject of the dark enigma. I think we may discover ways that that's relevant, you know, to our, what we're all dealing with now. But it also feels like the sort of regularly scheduled programming is not necessarily the thing for the evening. So I think we're just going to find our way together tonight and be able to talk and reflect and share and sit and just be with things as they are in Sangha. And that feels like a good thing to do. So I invite you all, I would love it if you all could, just as you are moved, just unmute yourself and share a word or maybe two about how you're doing, what's happening for you now, what's going on inside, just so we can kind of, you know, layer them together and start to begin to put words to our experience.
I just feel like my attachments are being torn away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wanda from Tucson. And what comes up for me is a lot of curiosity. I'm just amazed and quite curious about what's going on. Thank you.
Thanks.
Stunned and wondering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every day is another day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Like with a lot of the rest of the year, it feels like we're riding something really big and we don't really know what it is or what it are.
You're unmuted.
Hi, this is Anna Knowles. I'm with my husband, John. And I feel rage and disgust.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I would echo that as intensely as possible.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Donna here from Hawaii. I actually feel grateful that things that are coming out into the light so that they can be discussed and processed. And that tamps down a lot of the rage or sorrow or whatever that I feel.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is John in Berkeley, and I want to echo that sentiment. In many ways, I feel almost thankful, oddly enough, that we can, you know, the emperor has no clothes. We can now like have the discussion that I think a lot of people have been.
I think we lost you, John.
I'm a little frightened that we may not be able to come out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks.
This is Maureen in Rye, Colorado. I just got a hint of the happenings through a text from a friend. I was at a nursing home vaccine clinic today, and it was actually a joyful event.
Yeah.
When I look inside, I really feel tense about everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tension. Yeah.
I feel great anticipation about what promise this turning of the Dharma wheel might yield. It might be a turning point that we can nurture into balance.
Uh-huh.
Feel off balance and I guess angry and fearful.
I share David's hope, and I noticed I was on a walk this afternoon in the neighborhood, and I could just feel my reactive mind taking over as I passed a neighbor's Trump Pence sign. And for the first time, I felt like I really want to take that sign out of the ground and realized that I was in trouble. I really needed to kind of re-engage some sense of compassion.
Yeah, thanks.
I feel, this is Mary in Colorado. I feel sad and wondering, kind of like Andrew, wondering what is the answer here? And just wondering about the incivility that has peaked. So yeah, sad about that, and wondering where we go next.
Thanks.
So Liz in Colorado, I think mostly I feel unstuck. I feel the movement, and I tend to be very optimistic. I hated what I saw. On the other hand, it's like the scab is off the boil, and things have got to come up from underneath, and we've got to keep letting this come up. And I was really impressed with the passion that some of the legislators were speaking today, watching it this evening. And I guess there's goodness there. I have to trust it. Somehow I have to trust this shift. I know it was back in 1812 that this happened. I think it was 1812 before. And so here we are, you know, and we're doing it again. We're facing it again. It's the movement. It's a big flow. It's a big, huge dam is open for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the country.
Thank you.
I just was reminded of that statement about koans. Don't think that it means something. And don't think that you don't have to do anything about it. And that does feel in a way to me sort of connected with the sort of gestational quality of dark enigma. Something is happening and I don't know what it is. But it doesn't mean I don't have to do something about it. And so that's a kind of poignant place to be, because there are all kinds of stories and opinions that come up, but at the same time, I feel in my heart a kind of longing kind of connection to us, you know, all of us. We're having a hard time with this, and where will it go? And what's my part?
Well, I've had so many emotions during the day, but I guess the image that comes up right at the moment is bemused watching protesters walk through the Senate or Statuary Hall, the Confederate flag, walking into the Senate, kind of just wandering around. And I'm thinking, I've never been to Washington, D.C. How many people have been inside that Senate room? And here they are. They were there. And what did they get out of that? Being in that space, that just confuses me.
Thank you.
To pick up where she was point is whether there's a point or not, whatever happened is going to happen. And in the last year or two decades, whatever, is that mindfulness present somewhat of a vision and of it, right? So I'm confused. We have all this information and all this knowledge. We're doing so little. That's why I abstain from anything. Some of the people here know it, but I don't get involved in any of it. So that's all.
I like Liz's metaphor of the scab being taken off. I've been feeling that what has been emerging for the past 4 years is the shadow side of our country that has never been acknowledged. And at least some of us can't turn away from that anymore if we didn't know about it before. At the same time, I'm in shock, I'm stunned. I'm not surprised, because these terrorists represent our shadow, but it's still, and I'm in grief for our country. So I do hope that this will lend itself to an even deeper examination than the one that has begun.
Yeah. I met with a friend to walk and sit out in nature today, as we had helicopters flying over the roundhouse. And we had a wonderful talk about, you know, what a relief it is to go towards fear. I think that's the overriding thing for me, is being afraid of of what this is, along with being hopeful of what this is, and but not to run away from the fear part is a great relief.
Thank you.
This is Estrella from Santa Fe. And it just felt like Manjushri's sword was just ripping up veils, and things were getting, this danger has always been here, and people haven't been relating to it that way. Mm-hmm. And it didn't feel like a bad thing that it was being revealed to be itself.
Is there anyone else who would like to offer some words about where you're at before we meditate for a little while?
I want to just say something. I'm debating about it because my day has been on and off engaging with what's happening, because there is in the background, I have a relative who's quite sick with COVID, and that has been pretty much in my mind a lot. So I've been feeling quite sad and preoccupied. So,
yeah, thanks. Well, you know, I really feel, you know, just grateful and actually really quite held by everybody's heartfelt words, you know, which really do form a kind of Indra's net, you know, all kinds of feelings from, you know, pain and rage and to a certain kind of hope, curiosity. You know, I think that these are all facets, you know, of a whole that, you know, we're each holding perhaps different facets at the moment. But I think, you know, I could relate to so many of the things that I, even if I'm not feeling them acutely in the moment, I probably will, you know. So it feels really good to hear your words and to come together. You know, and it just, you know, it's one of those days where I just feel really, really grateful for our practice and for our community, and to be able to come together and to find a way to just be with what is, as hard as that can be, you know, in the spirit of what, you know, I think Martha was saying of sort of not turning away, of not turning away from the fear and the pain, and the rage and the curiosity and the hope. So let's sit together, holding all of that, and then after the sit, we'll talk some more. We'll have some more conversation.
Thank you.
just feeling what it's like to be you today. Feeling your body in contact with the chair or the cushion. Feeling an awareness of the night that we're all in, the darkness. The darkness of the season. And the darkness of uncertainty, not knowing. And allowing yourself to really feel deeply what's in your heart. in the dark, darken further. in the dark, darken further. So take a moment to stretch or wiggle if you need to do that. So I think what I'd like to do is just to say a little bit about this this term, dark enigma. I'm going to just offer a few thoughts about it and sort of see how that might enter or maybe not enter our, you know, our thoughts and feelings about the day, what's going on in our country, our world. We could talk a little bit more about that, but perhaps see if this sensibility of dark enigma might, you know, shine a ray of darkness onto this territory. So we came upon this term dark enigma in a book by David Hinton that is recently out called China Root. And the book is really exploring the Taoist roots of the Chan tradition. So when Buddhism came from India to China, it met the indigenous spirituality there of Taoism. And they combined in many ways to give rise to the tradition that in Chinese is called Chan, and we tend to call Zen. And so a lot of the kind of the philosophy, the sensibility, the spirituality from Taoism became quite important to the sort of foundational sensibility of Chan. And David Hinton talks about the Chan project as a dismantling of human conceptual constructions, explanations, stories, opinions, assumptions, even language itself, all of the things that tend to structure our conscious minds and that give us a sense of identity. And that when we can begin to dismantle these structures, this can reveal a new way of being. The Zen master Wang Po called Zen as a project of clearing away shit piles. And when we do this, we can be liberated into a larger identity that is interwoven with the landscape, the cosmos, with the earth and with each other in a way that offers a radical liberation, a liberation from the prisons of the mind that we tend to live in without even knowing it. And in this way, Chan is kind of an extension of a Taoist principles. And one of the most fundamental of these, the philosophical and ontological distinction, is between what David Hinton calls, the words he uses are absence and presence, which are similar to what we might call emptiness and form, or the generative void and the 10,000 things, the things of the world. in the Tao Te Ching, it says, all beneath heaven, the 10,000 things, it's all born of presence. And presence is born of absence. Dark enigma is the name for something that's before and beyond names, before presence and absence give birth to each other. It's the undifferentiated first thing that's actually sort of by its nature impossible to talk about. It's the existence tissue before any division, before any conception, before any words. So in the Tao Te Ching, it says, the way that can be named is not the true way. Let me find the... In perennial absence, you see mystery. And in perennial presence, you see appearance. Though the two are one and the same, once they arise, they differ in name. One and the same, they're called dark enigma. Dark enigma, deep within dark enigma, the gateway of all mystery. So dark enigma is a return to a kind of a consciousness before language, where there's a feeling of things being a single whole, vast and deep and everywhere. It arises in meditation as an awakening to what is, without words or ideas. Those moments in meditation where we just touch into just this, the bare ground of existence. Lao Tzu, the author of the Tao Te Ching, called meditation dark enigma union. So it's a way of contacting dark enigma and seeing our original nature. So, you know, a question that it brings up for me is how do we cultivate a relationship with dark enigma? And another question that is arising for me strongly today with everything that's going on is, you know, there's a sense with this sense of dark enigma that the darkness that it's referring to is the place before names and words and concepts. And so the darkness is kind of without having points of reference, you know? And it's a place of a birthplace, a place of the birth of all possibility. But when I think of darkness, you know, another thing that can come to mind is something more malignant, something, that I think we're feeling into today that feels, it can feel like fear, can feel like evil. It can feel like something that can cause us harm, something that will take advantage of our vulnerability. So one question that I'm holding in my mind today is, Is there a relationship between this generative dark enigma that the Taoists began to try to speak of, and this more sort of malignant feeling of darkness? And the one way that I, sort of a point of similarity that occurs to me is that that both do seem to have that feeling of being in a place of something unknown and being without our usual guideposts, our points of reference, not being able to navigate easily in a clear, light, known way. And then that got me to thinking about how we think in our tradition about evil, about that type of darkness that is something, you know, that we're bearing witness to today in our country. The sort of archetype for that in Buddhism is Mara, who is the Lord of Illusion, who, you know, first comes in our story of the Buddha's life and awakening, and as he was on his path, he was continually tempted and tormented by Mara, who tried to derail him from his path of awakening by tempting him with all kinds of pleasures and fears and lies. And in fact, you know, Mara is sometimes called the Lord of Illusion. And it does feel like there's something, you know, that in a way Mara is not so much evil exactly as it's just full of delusion, lie, the misrepresentation of the ways that things are. And, you know, what we're seeing today is so much about what happens when lies, malignant lies, take root and spread. And where delusion and truth can't, you know, aren't being distinguished from each other. And of course, you know, it's not just today, you know, this has been happening for a long time, and perhaps, you know, it's really even, you know, woven into something fundamental about the United States, you know, the horrible divisive delusion upon which, you know, our country was founded with slavery. And the constant projection of badness into the other, you know, usually an other from who looks different from the white so-called founders. So it's a sort of a delusion of us and them, of that separation. The good ones and the bad ones, the worthy and the unworthy. And then I wonder, you know, if this really does have to do with that other aspect of dark enigma that is actually a source of possibility and comfort in a way, you know, of just being able to kind of rest in the thusness and the not knowingness, you know, even in the midst of difficulty. And that there's so many ways that we can experience this darkness. So I think I'll stop there and just I'm really interested in hearing from you all about what's coming up in your meditation, what's coming up from sitting together and sitting with this koan, and maybe anything about dark enigma that is alive in you. So please just unmute yourself and offer any thoughts.
Just thank you. Thank you so much, Megan. Just one phrase that I was thinking about before we sat that really seems to resonate with the day, and also especially with what you're saying, is just the one little thing from the Ta-Nehisi Coates book, Between the World and Me, where he keeps talking about the people who believe that they are white. Mm-hmm. And that feels like that just there's a kind of pathos about that. And in the believe that they are, you know, it is a kind of delusion, and also in some sense a warding off of that other sense of dark enigma, you know. And that's all. So
yeah, that's really interesting. I think you're suggesting you know, there's a sort of a defensive level of darkness, the division, the delusion, that actually it protects us from truly touching into the radical mystery of dark enigma. Yeah. Uh-huh.
When you were talking about dark enigma having kind of maybe I can't think of the way you said it now, but like a bad side or a good side, the it felt to me like the hard part for me is kind of the uncontrollableness of it. And I think that's where I feel like the attachment is getting ripped from me, like just because there's no controlling the outcomes or what'll happen or whether something that happened is gonna turn out good or bad, or you know, all that is uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. And so can turn out either way or both ways a lot of times.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so right. So I guess the implication of that is that it's really important how we relate to that lack of control. Is that something that we can sort of surrender to, you know, and surf, you know, surf those waves? Or does that make us, you know, feel like we need to scramble to reassert control? Yeah.
That's something that I was noticing as I thought about the day watching. That first of all, as I watched the mob swarm the building and and those images of breaking the glass and climbing in through windows and running through halls. There was this kind of a recognition in a way of the of moments when I feel out of control, when something's out of control in me, but also then a kind of wondering about who are you? You know, who are you actually? What is your life? And a large kind of not knowing, but a feeling of kind of lostness, of lost people, whatever that means, and I don't know what it means. And then watching the both house, you know, members of both houses making their 5 minutes or under statements, and noticing a kind of two-ness there too, because on the one hand it felt like they needed to say something, they needed to make a statement, there were decisions to be made, and this was a moment, and a moment in which they seemed to feel the need to say something important, to say something real in a way. I thought about, you know, Manjuan's cat, say something real. And it felt like they were trying to say something real, and yet it was within the context of like, this is my job and my position as well. But then underneath all of that, on their faces and in their body's language, what I saw was, this is a person who's had a big, big experience today, together of uncontrollability and together with a bunch of people that they don't actually know that well. And you could, it was one picture that flashed in the day of one woman who was lying down on the floor, and one of her colleagues, a guy, was just holding her hand. And I thought, you know, there's been that for these people today too. And so it was that feeling of the togetherness of the dark enigma, the part we can't name, the thing that is so real, even when we watch each other, and the part that is like, well, what's my position about this?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Megan, for what you offered and are offering still with this exploration. I found it really beautiful and nourishing, and helping, speaking to what I'm going through, what I've been experiencing. And I think the thing I find myself landing on is that birthing that you spoke of, the birthing from the dark enigma, is always happening and always available. And the returning to that place before the concepts, that consciousness before deciding what it is, that open, vast consciousness, that too is always happening and always available. So it's just like this movement happening all the time. And I can have a tendency to, after the birthing, to fall headlong into what was birthed and get tangled. And I can have the temptation, when the returning happens, to try to go further, and that would lead to that kind of blank oblivion. But if I trust the rhythm, I'm just in that place of birthing and returning, mysterious, following it along. So just briefly want to share my experience of the meditation before the meditation that this spoke to. I was sitting here as we were gathering and watching the squares light up with their warm glows. And I felt this feeling that my head said, that's out of place. But I set that aside and just decided to feel it. And I realized it was excitement. And then my head said, you shouldn't be feeling that. What's been happening today? But then these words floated in from Joan. It turns out the first time I heard them was from Joan, saying that anxiety is just excitement unsupported by breath. And then I realized when I sat in this chair before everyone, I was breathing in a deeper way for the first time in a long while from today. So that anxiety that had been with me all day turned to excitement for being here with everyone. And it was the being here with everyone that brought that breath to me. And then I just kept falling into that place of, well, let me return and see what's next, see what's next. And yeah, really lovely. So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you. Yeah. What a gift.
I've kind of got a question that came up from your talk, Megan, which I loved. I think what's coming up for me is in these years of practice of embracing the dark, I've kind of come to wish that, you know, there was different language, that we just didn't have that confusing language that braided these things together, you know, the dark that is danger and deception and, you know, what what the organism really wants to avoid for its safety. And the embracing dark, you know, the beautiful dark. And what I kind of was starting to get from the talk is, oh, maybe is this a place where I need to introduce not to? And I wondered if that was kind of what you were getting at or not.
Well, you know, I had prepared a whole talk that I didn't seem appropriate today, but I'll maybe just say a little piece of it, which was, you know, exploring, you know, my lifelong fear of the dark and sort of how I've approached that in practice. And I think it links to what you're saying, Martha, is that actually in some ways they feel like totally different things, you know, that malignant dark and then the generative, generous dark, but sometimes they feel very close. And they for me at different times they both feel threatening. You know, there's the threat to the, as you're saying, the threat to the organism, you know, the fear and the malignancy, but the dark enigma actually is in a way is its own kind of threat, because it takes away all of our ideas, all the things that we think we have, all of the things we think we are, the things we think we know. And there have been times for me that's terrifying. You know, I mean, it can open out into something quite beautiful, but the passage, you know, can be really disturbing and disorienting and almost like that sort of fear of annihilation can feel similar. And the two different, maybe two or not two types of dark.
I'm interested in kind of exploring it that way. Because it just started feeling like a given to me. Oh, they're just two different things that we've confused because they're similar. You know?
Yeah. Right, but it's, you know, I certainly don't feel certain about any of this, and it's one of the reasons I'm you know, I'm glad to hear what you're saying, and I'm interested in what others have to say. You know, are these, you know, sort of experientially, is there some way that these feel coextensive, or do they feel like two different things that happen to share a designation, you know?
Thank you.
I was just thinking, Megan, that if we look at today as the kind of passage that you were just talking about, and think of what I was seeing right before we started, others have referred to the watching the senators and congressmen do their best to articulate their position and what the day had meant. But as Sarah said, they'd all been through a really terrifying day on a lot of levels. And so they'd really been in a very dark place. And so what, as I was listening to you all, I was thinking, well, that's, I mean, one of the questions for me is what is the darkness reveal? What is the potential for it to reveal things? And I'm now realizing what I was seeing in their presentations was what was rising up for many of them, if not most of them, was this sense of fragility. So out of the fear was this sense of, oh my gosh, we have this country, we have this responsibility, we have this place that has a certain sacredness to it. So the question, I mean, what is the nature of that sacredness? And to me, it's the fact that all human communal endeavors are, by their very nature, fragile and full of potential fallacies and mistakes and their own, and we've been driven down some of those paths, but that there's something, as David was talking about, something very hopeful to me in the way in which that, for many of them, they were able in their own constricted roles, perhaps, but to articulate how important the sense of being able to honor a human life and its threat that they saw before them today. And there is something beautiful in that, in the their capacity as our, in quote, leaders to be able to do that, however constricted by roles they might be. Maybe that's what's giving me a sense of a bit of hope.
Mm-hmm.
And that couldn't, as Liz said, that could not have happened unless the darkness in the scab had been ripped off.
Thank you.
You know, we often hear from the cognitive psychologists that humans' two primary adaptive mechanisms are the frontal cortex and the opposable thumb. And so, you know, the business, the normal business of the human animal is making sense. And that, of course, is the construction of these cognitive overlays of pattern recognition and cognition, concept development. And so to stare right at the unknowable and the, you know, that undifferentiated experience, which our practice teaches us is the source, you know, the reality. But to do that, it's pretty natural for the human animal to have a response of fear. And so then there's an attribution of something malignant, and the word that you're using, Megan, something malignant on the other side, there's something malignant outside of me that I don't understand, and I need to understand it, and I can't understand it, and I'm afraid of it. And so we attribute evil or malignancy to the other that is a fabrication. It's a concept that we generate out of this not knowing. And so for me, the way this all works out is that the dark enigma that is embracing and unknowable and the source is the actual experience. And the sense of darkness that we're characterizing as malignant or evil is actually an attribution that we place onto the unknowable experience. And it comes from an instinctive tendency of our species to try to make sense. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something we can also embrace in ourselves and accept as part of the human experience.
Yeah, I guess in the language of, you know, the Taoist language, it's a type of presence, you know, a giving rise to complexity, to the 10,000 things, the 10,000 ideas and, you know, ways of structuring our minds and the worlds. And I think part of what I felt like we were seeing today is what happens when the delusional nature of that comes to predominate so much, you know, and is unchecked.
I'm finding myself feeling the word delusion is really sticking in me. And there's this feeling of the necessity of it that I'm really curious about.
Mm. Can you say something, Kelly, about how you see that necessity?
I think for me, it's maybe what comes before the understanding, or the thing that comes before it's required to have that delusion before I can actually feel like I can see something, or something that comes into light, I guess.
Yeah. Right. I mean, to the extent that, you know, in this sort of sensibility that we're talking about, even having, you know, even saying this is a hand is a delusion, right? It's giving it, it's reifying something that doesn't actually exist. You know, that there's a way that we're always sort of moving between, you know, the sort of delusion of form, I guess, you know, and then the sort of liberation of it.
I've been reading China Root for a while, not very far in, but, you know, a ways. And one of the most interesting things to me was when David Hanton talks about how early humans, when we developed language, that's when we started dividing things up and causing that separation. And here we are, we all use words to talk about everything. And I just remembered that I had this experience a long time ago when I was in my early 20s and I was upset about something. I have no idea what it is now. And a friend said, well, here, take this Valium, you know, you'll feel a lot better. You won't be anxious. As a one and only time in my life I've ever had a Valium. And my experience with it is I could no longer understand words. I could hear the sound, someone talking to me. I could not understand anything about that. And I could not speak. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I had no words.
Yeah.
And so I thought, huh, I wonder if that is what the experience would be like before language, before words started making the separation. And I'm very intrigued by it, and Dark Enigma. I think it's something I've been trying, having this sense of my whole life, didn't know there was a name for it. Still don't know what it is, but the first, it seems real, it seems important, it seems something I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for putting words to that.
I think that I really appreciated just listening to everybody the first time around. It brought out so much for me in terms of what I was, you know, so much was going on and kind of bubbling up inside, and you get all these reactions to what's happening and what should be happening and what's really happening and how could this be happening. It sort of just brought up this question for me. It was like, can my heart really handle this? Is my heart big enough for all of this? You know, like all of this fear, really, and sadness about what I thought our society is supposed to be like, you know, and then to see what it is. And underneath this sort of veneer of attraction that we produce for ourselves and to make us feel safe and secure, and to get more in touch with the ugliness and the shame and the hate, you know, and all the blame and all these things that have just been on display. And I guess when I come down to it, it's like, well, this is part of the generative force. It's producing this presence and absence, and it's just the part I don't want to see very much most of the time. So I think that's the level of fear and disappointment sort of and sadness, but also it just feels real. And that part of it is kind of very unnerving and unsettling for me.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. I'm aware that our time is coming to an end. Is there any final thought that must be shared?
Yeah, I just can't help but think about what's driving, about the rioters are probably being driven by that whole sense of not having a point of reference, and everything. One guy said something about if Biden has control of the country, it's going to be socialist, and he just sounded so desperate. So that whole thing about having to change into something that's not familiar and feeling so disoriented, and it does kind of make me feel a sense of maybe, I don't even know if it's true or not, but maybe understanding in a more human way what's happening, instead of just that they're being bullies and that they're just mean people, because, you know, like that.
Yeah. They have their own terror, even if it seems like a delusion.
Yeah.
There were two words that jumped out for me in this conversation, and David was mentioning that sense of separation, you know, having to make sense of stuff. And here I am with however it is that whatever my perspective is, and out there is somebody else's. But also Martha threw in this little thing about not to. And those two ideas stick with me, because we are all this. And, you know, I don't like seeing, you know, myself in this chaos. However, I think it might be worth for me to look at how I can feel better about myself if I separate myself from the chaos and go into that them and us. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, right.
And thanks. That to me is the dark enigma.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for your, you know, your presence and the sharing of your hearts. It actually feels really helpful and healing just to have this conversation. I'm really grateful for you all. And just a reminder that this is the first in a series that will be each Wednesday evening in January. So next Wednesday, same time, same channel, you know, is Andrew, I think you're up next, right? Yeah, so next week, Andrew will be talking and we'll continue the conversation. So thank you all, and I will close with the four vows. The four boundless vows. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. Thank you all. Good to see you.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Megan. Good night.
Thank you, Megan.
Yes, Megan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good to see everyone.
Thank you, Megan.
Thank you.